You're listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
All right, 12 o'clock in the great city of Chicago. Thank you to Jim Bowden. Thank you to Dan Graziano. Thank you, Danny Zetterman. Thank you, Chris Black. And Carmen and Yurko are here in the studio for Crosstalk. This hour is brought to you by Twin Peaks, the ultimate sports lodge. Twin Peaks full-service bar features an extensive selection of drafts served at 29 degrees in ice-cold mugs. Head for Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, and scenic views. We are excitement. We are intensity. We are the Wolves. Get your fan four-packs, including 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and popcorn for one low price. Fan four-packs start at just $18 per ticket. Go to chicagowolves.com. And thank you, thank you, thank you, Thomas Waddle, for doing a lengthy Waddle Wednesday with us.
Tommy Waddle.
Tommy.
The only Tom that could come to this town and be more popular than Waddle is Tom Brady. He's the only one.
How about that?
Let's hope it happens. I'm not going to get
Tom.
Brady.
Tommy.
So
we'll see.
41.
Still wants to play.
Yeah, he said he's got more to prove. I don't know what else he has to prove. God bless him. Guy's got drive. That's why he's good.
That's fine.
Fine by me.
Give him some receivers.
Come play here.
I think we'd agree that they had some problems on their offensive line.
They had an injury that didn't help them. Their receivers were not good. Once Josh Gordon did his thing again and Antonio Brown did his thing, nobody, you know, so Sanu gave him nothing.
Would you guys...
They traded a second-round pick for Sanu.
Crazy. Oof.
Yeah, they did.
Yep. Would you guys pay Tom Brady $30 million
yes.
a year?
We talked about this yesterday. $70 million.
I would.
Over 2 years, even if you had to guarantee it.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, well, not a problem because where you are, but you also have ramifications. We talked about Prince going and Leonard Floyd going and everybody going. Yeah, that's not even an issue. Of course, because he's a quality quarterback. Quality quarterback that you can't find every single day, even at his age.
Even at his age,
he's still a quality quarterback. Yeah. And you got Allen Robinson here. Hopefully you'll have a tight end here. You know, Austin Hooper.
If Hooper becomes available.
And you don't know because the Atlanta Falcons might franchise tag him, but Hooper had 75 catches.
Hunter Henry?
Yeah, whoever becomes available.
He gets hurt a lot, but.
Yeah, you'd prefer somebody that stays healthy.
Did Hunter play all 16 this year? I'm trying to think. Did he? Did he finally have a healthy season?
You'd have to hunt that up and take a look at it. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
I believe Hunter Henry may not have played in every single game. For those who have Hunter Henry on their fantasy teams, you will find out.
I still think
Hunter Henry played 12 games this year.
Right, so he still missed 4 games.
He missed weeks 2 through 5 he missed at the beginning. So game 1, he had some catches for 60 yards, and you didn't see him again until October.
I'm a fan of his, but he's never played 16 games. So
that's problematic.
I still think Brady's going to get to the end of the offseason where it comes time to make a decision, and he's going to say, my best chance to win is still New England. They got a bunch of picks. They got money to spend. What if they go out and get A.J. Green?
They got a ton of free agents.
You know what they do.
You know what you get with a bunch of picks, though? You get a bunch of guys that might be able to play.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily guys that can play. They got a wide receiver there, and Harry might be a stud. Yeah. Might be a stud.
Right.
But he's not there yet.
Might not.
Yeah. So with draft picks, having a ton of draft picks doesn't really do a damn thing for you.
What if Belichick tells him, I'll go get you A.J. Green? Maybe Belichick really wants to move on. Maybe he's had enough. But I can't see that being the case. I think they're all going to come to their senses when it comes time. And Belichick's going to realize my best chance to win is still with this guy.
Isn't it? If you're not doing it with Tom Brady out there, aren't you blowing that whole thing up anyway and starting over? At some point, you are blowing it up and you're starting over.
Hard to imagine Belichick wants to blow anything up, you know?
Why? He may get off on trying to
and then rebuild the whole thing?
Maybe.
That might be the exact challenge that he needs.
Yeah, like what's he going to do with himself?
But they could still, you still got one of the best defenses in the league with, you know, the quarterback that's won you 6 Super Bowls. Like, I'd be so tempted to say we can pull it off one more time.
So this is what their draft is going to look like. You're going to address your offensive line at least with 1 or 2 picks. You're going to get some fresh offensive linemen in there that can be mainstays on your offensive line. Are they getting a guy back from injury?
At the
Patriots.
Well, Andrews was hurt,
yeah,
right?
There you go. Yeah. So you get a guy back, you're getting two more offensive linemen. I don't know what you address in free agency. I don't know how much money they have to spend.
They've got some money, I think.
All right, so, and then you've got to get receivers.
Well, that's the key.
You've got running backs. Yeah. You need receivers.
Yeah, they need a tight end. And remember, they need Gronk to unretire.
And remember, with running backs, who cares? You got running backs. Dime a dozen. All of them. Burkhead, Michelle, James White.
Nobody's proved that better than Belichick over the years. Doesn't matter.
They're a dime a dozen. He'll find a guy. He'll plug him in. Yeah. But the offensive line there was not what it needed to be. Do you need to address the defense? Not really.
I don't know. I feel like this is all just a pipe dream, and it's nothing's going to happen. I heard somebody call into you earlier and say it'd be like Dwayne Wade. I disagree with that.
Yeah, I do too. And Orlovsky said he went back and watched every game.
Of Dwayne Wade's?
No.
yeah. How great would that be? Orlovsky, tell us about Dwayne Wade when he came to the Bowl.
He said Tom Brady still got it.
I think he does. What do I know?
He may not be the guy from 5, 10 years ago, but he still got it.
Well, I don't think it's Dwayne Wade. I mean, everybody knew Dwayne Wade was done when he came here. You know, they just sort of were like, oh, he's available and we'll sell some tickets. Okay, here's $20 million and then we'll trade you in a year. I mean, like, they, you know, they knew. The Bulls knew.
Yep.
I mean, they when they signed Dwayne Wade, I had heard from one person in the organization.
The three alphas, remember that?
Described it
as a joke.
Yeah, we sort of had to, just because. Like, yeah, I mean, they knew. Yeah,
Dwayne Wade.
Right? I mean, was
there Tom Seaver?
This is, yeah. Like
Doug Drabeck?
This is not Dwayne Wade. I'm sorry. I disagreed with that.
Those two names, White Sox names that were signed.
Well, they were trying to, at least that was a maneuver
late
where they were,
season.
Right, and they were trying a playoff team that year, and they were, you know, they thought they could win with, you know, as, boy, remember, Griffey still made the defensive play of the game in the play-in game, remember? He threw out Michael Kadire, I think, at the plate, didn't he? So the two big plays in that game were the Tommy home run and the Ken Griffey Jr., he threw a guy out from center, if I'm remembering correctly.
Crazy.
And they kept it 1-0.
Crazy.
So it actually helped the White Sox play that, they lost in four to Joe Maddon's Rays back then.
By the way, what happened to all the crew?
They're upstairs. There's a big powwow with all the producers. Tyler's flying solo down here.
And we're wishing him the best of luck. Keep the plane in the air.
He's steering the ship.
You said ship.
I said ship.
Autopilot. Yeah. Right now it's on autopilot. Don't touch the buttons. Don't go getting goofy. Don't go crazy.
No, he's good. The kid's good. He knows what he's doing.
Tyler's good.
He knows.
You know where Tyler used to work.
Kentucky
Fried Chicken.
Macy's. Dino's Sports Fan Shop in the Glen.
I think Macy's.
Our guy, Dino.
I love Dino.
Dino's awesome.
That shop, I haven't been inside of it. I've only been by it. Danny Zetterman's son, Avery, had a birthday party at, what's the name of that place in the Glen there for kids? It's awesome. They got like rock walls and all zip lines. Funtopia, it's called. Oh, this place, you should see how much fun. I wanted to climb
the rock walls. Rodney Dangerfield over there for a second?
This place, you should see.
And it's right next to Dino's. There's our guy. I didn't go in because I was with the kids taking them into the party.
At the Glen.
I walk by the Glen. You look in there and it's like, oh my God.
I went and got Brett a jersey.
It's Xanadu tonight. Are you?
Shaq LSU jersey.
That's pretty cool. He likes the throwbacks.
He likes the throwbacks.
Yeah. It's like Xanadu in that place, man. So, I love it. Dino's a good dude.
There you go.
Is Olivia Newton-John in there? She was the star of Xanadu.
Was she the star of Xanadu?
You don't remember the movie? It's a great movie.
I saw Xanadu, to be
back
honest.
Late 80s, I think. Yeah. Xanadu.
Nothing tops Olivia Newton-John in the black skin tight pants and grease.
So, anytime we play charades, I always throw Xanadu in there. Yeah. I get yelled at. I get cussed at by the girls. Yeah. I go, what? It's a movie.
What do you think of the rumors on Arenado to the Cubbies?
Yeah, I was reading past, and we're going to talk about that. I read passing in a long article about like where we are at this point in the offseason, what has happened, and what is still going to happen. Arenado's awesome.
How do they afford him?
Well, they can afford him. I don't know. Maybe in their minds, at least, they know what the contract is, and there won't be any negotiation with Scott Boras when it comes time to sign Chris Bryant. Maybe they think Chris Bryant's best days are behind him because of the injury. I don't know. Nolan Arenado's terrific. I mean, you always wonder with the guys that call Coors home, like, what will a full season look like when you're not playing 81 games in that park? I don't think his home road splits are, like, ridiculously... Like, there's a huge disparity between them. Is there really?
Yeah, I'll give him two.
You always wonder about that a little.
But
I still think Chris Bryant, as long as he's healthy, like, to me, he is an elite player.
Wilson Contreras and Jason Hayward to the Colorado Rockies, and you get back Nolan Arenado, and then you trade and then Chris you Bryant for prospects.
Yeah, you flip them to Atlanta for some of their great prospects, or
correct.
You flip them to Washington.
Correct.
To replace Rendon, you know. I suppose I would do that deal. I'm not a Cub fan, but I think Chris Bryant's really good. And I'd be careful to trade him away just to trade him away. Because if you still feel like you can win, I think he can help you win. Not that Nolan Arenado can't, because he's terrific.
So, Nolan Arenado, home OPS.
Is this his career?
This is 2019.
So you should look at his career, but okay, do
2019, 1,057 home OPS. Away, 867.
All right, so it's a disparity, obviously, because the home is so out of whack. But there's nothing wrong with an 867 OPS on the road.
It just, take that.
It looks crazy because of what he can do and what they all do at Coors Field. But if it were six something or in the sevens, maybe wouldn't you be a little bit more concerned? I don't think you anything over an 850 OPS. You're doing something right offensively.
Yeah,
you know. So he's pretty great, and he's still great. Elite defensively. He's also a year older than Bryant.
Last year in 18,
2 years ago.
Or 2 years ago, at home, 1,105 okay. at home, 772 on the road.
Yeah, you should look at his career, okay. just so we can kind of get an idea.
I will give you his career splits.
You might not be able to on that page, can you? Go to Baseball Reference. You can get it there easier.
Okay.
Yeah, they've got great filters there.
Yes, they do.
I'm just trying to see what he's getting paid.
Oh, he's getting paid a lot. I mean, the new contract kicks in.
27, no, where he is, 2020. 35
million. He's in the 30s.
There you go. Home OPS.
All right, this is career.
Career. Home OPS.
It's going to be over 1,100.
995 at home.
Okay.
799 away.
I mean, does that totally scare you and freak you out? I mean, you're still basically talking about a guy with an 800 OPS on the road.
Correct.
It's not bad.
Pretty good.
Does that give you his OPS plus or no?
His OPS.
I don't think it gives his plus.
It does not. So, there you go. Get her done.
Get her done.
That'd be unbelievable if they pull that off. They pull that off. By the way, the StatCast has a new defensive metric. They released it today.
Yeah.
Can you tell me who the number one best defensive infielder is in all of baseball?
This was based on last year's numbers?
This is based
on
last year's
numbers. Carlos
Correa. No.
Jose Lindor.
I'm going to say the best infielder in all of baseball.
Yes.
I'm going to say...
Jose Lindor.
Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, Francisco.
I'm going to say Matt Chapman.
It's called Outs Above Average. It's out for infielders, and the top defensive infielder in baseball is Javi
Baez. Good for Javi.
Arenado, 2, and Drelton Simmons, 3.
Oh, Simmons, duh.
Nick Ahmed, 4.
Nick Ahmed's
Trevor
awesome.
Story. Matt Chapman.
Matt Chapman. I knew Matt Chapman would have to be in there somewhere. There yeah, how could we forget Simmons? Phenomenal. Good for Javi. Javi's great defensively.
Numero uno.
He is. The tag. The tag is the best thing.
Oh, yeah. It's artistic.
We've
it's
never, artistic. In the his, like, they've been playing baseball for 150 years, and we've never talked about a guy being a great tagger until Javi came along.
He's ridiculous.
You know, like, when have we ever said, oh, my God, watch this guy tag? Never.
Except when he does it.
Exactly. He's made an art out of it. He's incredible.
All right, I'm just trying to figure out. You're adding $35 million in Arenado, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting rid of, what, maybe $1 million? First year arbitration eligible. Contreras.
He'll be more than that.
No, Contreras is going to be $5
million. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, but he was $684 last year.
I know,
year.
But he's going to go.
Right, but that's the space that you have. The space you save is the $684, not the $5 million he's going to make. Because he's never counted $5
million
against your cap.
He's never counted against your cap, yeah.
For $5
million. But you're not carving out. Yeah, yeah, I see
correct.
What you're saying.
And then you're giving them Hayward.
You're saddling
well,
them
you're,
with
you're
Hayward.
You're eating some of that, aren't you?
Is no, because you're taking all
$235. Oh, you're taking all of Arenado's? Okay.
All of Arenado's money.
Okay.
And they're only getting $96
back. Right,
so they're
you.
Saving.
So they're saving a lot.
They're saving $130 million.
I got you.
And you're giving them Contreras for doing that.
Hey, Hayward playing half his games in that park.
Could be good.
Not
and then
so
you
bad.
Trading Bryant for prospects, and you save another 18.3.
Okay. I guess it's a plan. You know, you're getting Nolan Arenado, who's still elite and probably will be for the next handful of years.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm still seeing a $14 million deficit.
They're at 218, York, but that's counting $5 million to Contreras and $18 million to Bryant. That's including their projections for arbitration awards.
So you're 5 and 18, 23. You're paying 35. You still have $12 million
And then
more
you're giving them 23 on Hayward.
I think York goes... factor that in, though.
Yeah, I have. $21 million.
We'll do a proper accounting at the break.
No. You're taking on 35. You're giving up 46. You're saving 11. You're giving up 18, 5, and 23.
We need an accountant.
I already did all this. I was up early this morning.
It's too early for math. I know it's lunchtime, but I mean, come on.
By the way, one other thing for you.
I was promised there would be no math.
Yeah, exactly. The Bengals-Browns in Ohio, a petition to make Bengals and Browns fans an official medical marijuana condition was submitted last month to the State Medical Board of Ohio.
Now, that's funny.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, that's very good.
I thought that was really good.
Hayward's $21 million in 2020, by the way.
He's 23, though, average annual value for luxury tax purposes.
Yeah, it counts. Yeah, the average annual is what hit. That's what the luxury tax hits.
That is correct. Yeah. And finally, did you hear Danny had a parenting issue last night?
I caught the tail end of it. I wasn't sure what it was. Something about the Challenger?
So they were watching TV.
Dodge Challenger.
And the space shuttle blew up back in 1986.
Yeah, Sally it was Ride. 2 days after, I think. I think it was Jan 28, wasn't it?
Jan 28.
Yeah, two days after the Super Bowl.
2 days after the Super Bowl, which was on the 26th. And no, not Sally Ride. Krista McCullough.
Her too, man.
Yeah.
She was the teacher.
Correct.
Yeah.
So Danny said he was watching it in his class.
We all were.
And as soon as the
fourth grade
Challenger blew up, they turned the TV off and acted, okay, time to have macaroni and cheese.
Yeah.
Well, last night at his house, he and Diana were watching a show. This thing came up, and his son saw the...
What was it?
They were watching...
Could have told him it was Armageddon, the movie.
So Diana said, I think we should
something
explain...
Something on the news?
No, it was some show, and they were referencing...
Mixed-ish.
What was it?
Mixed-ish.
Yeah.
What's that?
It's a new show.
It's a new show, like Black-ish. This is okay. Mixed-ish. And they referenced the space
Challenger.
Shuttle blowing up.
Okay.
And Danny's like, I don't want him to see that. And Diana said, no, he needs to see that.
Yeah.
That's life.
Part of
history. That's what happens. Danny said 6-year-old shouldn't be subjected to things like that. Chris and I said, quit being so soft, man.
Yeah, well, he's pampering him.
I was 9 when that happened.
I have a feeling Danny wasn't pampered in his childhood.
There's no chance.
I didn't see Harry pampering him back when they owned the dry cleaning store.
No chance.
Matter of fact, I think it was young Danny that was back there with the smoother in his hand getting things done.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he didn't appreciate his childhood. I don't know. Maybe he wished things were a little softer for him back in the day.
I think all of us can, distinctly remember those images. It wasn't just kids watching it. I mean, the whole country was watching it.
In a shopping mall in the Twin Cities recruiting for Northern Illinois.
And it was a big deal in all the schools because Krista McAuliffe was on the flight, was on the mission. And, like, so I think, like, every classroom in America was watching it. Yeah, and I was fourth grade, St. Mary Assel in Berwyn. There we were. And, you know, when you're a kid, you aren't quite sure how to comprehend that or understand it. You know, you think, what are we watching?
Is it, and then you know, you got kids in school that knew that exactly what happened.
You know, the teachers aren't sure. They're scrambling back and forth, you know, like wondering, what do they say to all of us now? They're running between classrooms trying to figure it out. And they're turning the TV off. And, yeah, I mean, it's you can't get that image out of your brain. And we saw that for weeks.
Meaning that the teacher's locker getting the bottle of vodka out.
Right. Like, they didn't know what to
do. Getting a blast of it and going, hey, what do we say?
What high school did you go to?
I went to Naperville North. We moved later that year. We moved from Berwyn.
I was about to say, were you a Morton grad?
No, my parents went to Morton East.
Yeah, both my parents.
What was the high school that the Bears practiced at? Morton East?
Yeah, it was Morton East. My mom used to take us there when we were little.
They would drive in a school bus, Hampton told me. A school bus in their gear.
Yep.
He goes, you're in gear all the way to freaking Berwyn.
Yeah. My mom would take us over there every once in a while. Like me and my brother. My youngest brother was probably too young at the time. But when we still lived in Berwyn, she'd drive us over there.
No indoor facility?
Yeah, right, correct. And so they'd practice there. That was like when the The Blackhawks used to do that at Johnny's. They'd get their gear on. The opposing team would come into town. They'd put their gear on at the United Center because the locker room's...
No, at the stadium.
Well, no, even at the United Center. Before they built new Johnny's, the old Johnny's locker rooms are too small. You can't accommodate an NHL team. And so they bring... Everybody would get... They'd put their gear on. They're like their kids.
They put their guards on
their skates. They'd walk onto the bus. They'd get to Johnny's. They'd walk off. And the trainer, the assistant, the equipment guy would stand there. They'd pop their guards off. They'd get on the ice. They'd practice. They'd get back on the bus. Go back to the United Center, shower, and go for their morning skate. That's what they used to do.
It's incredible.
Yes. You'd Absolutely. See them. Like, people used to hang out to get autographs. You'd see the Kings are in town. Drew Doughty's getting off the bus with his gear on, signing an autograph. He's got a stick in his hand.
Andre Kopitar.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They're walking in the side door at Johnny's.
But how about driving in a school bus?
That was hilarious.
Two school buses, offensive and defensive, I guess.
To Morton East.
From Lake Forest College to Morton East in Berwick.
I don't know how they picked that. I mean,
where did they? Only indoor facility?
Is that why it was the only one?
Well, remember, they used to practice at Notre Dame, too. The Bears did.
Oh, I don't remember.
Remember
that.
With Kevin Butler? Yeah.
I don't remember that.
They'd go in there and they'd practice there. Then they'd go down to Suwanee, Georgia.
That's what I was saying. Oh, Suwanee, Georgia, to use the Falcons summer facility to train for the playoffs.
No longer there, by the way, Suwanee, Georgia. Well, Suwanee, Georgia is, but they trained elsewhere.
Yeah.
Where's the Atlanta facility now?
I have no clue.
Flowery Branch.
Oh, I love Flowery Branch.
Yeah. It's northern suburbs of Atlanta. Flowery Branch.
Unbelievable.
I like reminiscing about the good old days, guys.
I've got a cryo chamber to go through.
Yeah,
go cryo. We'll see you. We got football. We got basketball, hockey, baseball, all kinds of fun stuff. We got everything for you.
Hawks lost last night.
They did.
I was there. It was great. Yeah.
Puck on Kane's stick twice,
he
right?
He had two great opportunities in the second. Just couldn't bury either one of them.
Yep. Talbot played great.
Yeah.
Played great. But Corey was good.
He was. That first goal wasn't pretty, but... No, I'm sorry. The second goal, the go-ahead goal, that was unfortunate. But wait, which one was it? No, maybe it was their first
goal. Both were turnovers in their zone.
They were,
zone.
But the first one
first
right
one
through
was
the five hole.
20 seconds into the second period.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah.
The other one, that was you weren't stopping that.
No.
The first one, he still played well.
All right, you guys have a great day.
See you tomorrow.
We are back tomorrow at 9. Have a wonderful rest of your day. The outstanding team of Carmen and Yurko are next. See ya.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
Happy hump day. A little colder today, but the sun is out. Yurko and I are out and about tomorrow. Do not miss it. Come see us. A Thursday show out and about. Twin Peaks and Oak Brook Terrace. And we're going to be with Brewhouse Legends. We're going to be releasing our 20 greatest Blackhawks of all time.
The Carmen and Yurko top 20.
This is our top 20 list. We're going to put it on the gram and we'll mention them. Five at a time, four different times throughout the show.
The countdown, 20 to 1.
And we're going to have a Bears round table. State of the Chicago Bears. JD is sick. He cannot make it. We went to the bench.
Had to go to the bench.
And he's no slouch. He's been covering the Bears forever. Mark Potash, Potsy from the Sun-Times, and Dan Wiederer from the Tribune. Maybe we'll have them fight, too. You know, just like old school, couple old papers. We've seen Wiederer with his shirt off.
Yeah.
You get Potsy to take his shirt off, we'll just have him fight.
It's not even
Let's go, boys. We're going to do like an hour's worth of roundtable discussion on how to fix the Bears and what they're going to do in this offseason. So don't miss that tomorrow. Come by and see us, Twin Peaks in Oak Brook, and we'll have the Bears roundtable with us, with Mark Potash, with Dan Wiederer. Should be a lot of fun. How do we fix the Bears? Who knows? They've got work to do. A year ago, it would have been crazy to suggest that. Could it all start with the hiring of the offensive coordinator? Hard to believe that that's going to change much because I don't see Matt Nagy relinquishing play calling duties. Just don't see it happening. He's too short. Like, he hasn't been in this gig long enough to relinquish duties. I think it would indicate a failure that he is not willing to indicate yet. Like, he's not waving the white flag on his ability to call plays in this league. It's different when Mike McCarthy does it after a bunch of wins and a Super Bowl title, and Mike McCarthy says, okay, we've kind of stagnated here a little bit. I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to let, who did it? I think Joe Philbin, whomever did it. I don't even remember, Yurk. Joe Philbin, I think, did it for a half a season. It's not Andy Reid, who's accomplished a lot in this league and has been to Super Bowls and has won a ton of games, saying, you know, after 15 years of calling plays, it's not Andy Reid saying, okay, maybe I need to take a step back, reassess things, be the manager of this team, set the culture, make sure I'm on top of every little detail that's going on in this building. I'm going to let Matt Nagy call plays. This ain't that. Matt Nagy relinquishing play calling duties 2 years into this indicates failure. And I don't think he's ready to do that.
Not only that, and the reason he's not willing to do that is when you become a head coach, if you are going to fail, you want to fail doing it your way. And you don't want to fail by letting somebody else decide what plays are going to be called. He came into this thing being the guy that was going to call the plays. He's going to go out. When they eventually fire him in Chicago, and he'll get fired. Everybody gets fired. He's going to say, I did it my way. I did it. I was the one making the calls. I've got nobody to blame but myself. So I gave it the best opportunity I was going to give it, and the best opportunity comes from me calling plays, not somebody else calling plays. So that's not happening. He's not relinquishing the play-calling duties.
People
can ask for it until the cows come home. It doesn't matter. He is going to call the plays.
Yerk, I think that's more unlikely than Tom Brady coming here to play quarterback. I'm serious. To me, I'm with you 100%. That is more unlikely to happen than Tom Brady coming here. And that seems pretty unlikely at this point. Let's face it.
I mean, we can sit and wish, and you can hope, and you can talk about, and you can say, how are you going to clear the space? All that type of stuff. We can talk about everything.
But Matt Nagy's not giving up play-calling duties 2 years into this.
That's not going to happen. They're also not going to replace every offensive lineman on that offensive line. And really, when you talk about fixing the Bears, and I know we're going to have a big chunk of this with the fellas tomorrow, but this offensive line, I saw a stat on Twitter, Carm. A stat on Twitter, something that the most successful runs the Chicago Bears had came behind Charles Leno.
So just off tackle left?
To the left side.
Yeah.
Let's just say to the left side, that's where their most successful runs are.
Yeah.
So you're comparing that to the two undrafted guys you had playing on the right side. That's what you're comparing it to.
Right.
So the quote or the fact comes out there just like as a blank fact, but it doesn't come out with any context. It doesn't come out with any texture. It doesn't come out with me starting to understand and to figure out, well, were they successful at all running the ball? And I think this year you would say it was a failure.
Yes.
This year's running game was a failure.
It was one of the worst in the NFL.
Failure is what it was.
Yep.
So what you're telling me is then with that fact is in a running game that has failed miserably, we had the least amount of failure running behind Charles Leno. That's what you're telling me.
Yes. So he's got that to hang his hat on.
Right. I can't wait till he gets that certificate. The least amount of failure, left tackle.
You think he hangs that on the wall?
Charles Leno. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But that's the point. When I'm getting this crap that comes out, little factoids, and it means nothing without texture and without context.
Without context.
And then people see that and they go, oh, well, they were really successful running behind Charles Leno. No, they weren't. Their running game stunk.
Yes.
And Charles Leno, at least on his side, he was blocking better than the undrafted kid on the other side that was filling in for Bobby Mays.
I do wonder how big the disparity was, and maybe we can even get a better idea. But something tells me, even running left, they weren't all that successful. I mean, we saw it all year. They could not consistently pick up chunk yardage on the ground. They just couldn't. And no matter who was in the backfield, most of the time, they were being met by bodies at or around the line of scrimmage, and it's tough to have a successful running game when that happens. Their only time they were successful was when they did a little power. They did some power eye a few games. Remember that? Was it the which game were they real? Was it the Charger game? I mean, I know they lost that game because the decision at the end. But was it the Charger game where they came out and eye and they ran it a lot? I think it was, and they were successful. That was one of their better games. Now we didn't see that a lot. And I guess Matt Nagy feels like he's not totally equipped for that. They don't really have a fullback. They just kind of used one of their tight ends to play that role. And there's probably not a lot of power eye that was in his playbook. I think he even joked about that afterwards. Like, when was the last time you ran plays like that? And he was like, I don't know, high school? I mean, like, it's just not running part of his repertoire,
running
right?
The old Veer, right, the Veer offense.
But that was the only time they were really successful was when they did kind of, for a little while there, let their guys, their offensive linemen, just sort of line up and play old school. Say, go hit somebody.
Yeah.
Try to move somebody.
Let's work off the assumption, too, Carm, that they're not going to change the quarterback.
Well, I think that's clear, unless they get Tom Brady.
They're not going to change the quarterback. So I'm working off that assumption. How do I make this team better? How do we go about the business of making them better? So I'm looking at an offensive lineman at the very least. One offensive lineman. You're looking at a brand-new tight end via free agency, preferably. an established tight end in the league, somebody that you can count on, not a kid that's coming out of college. Because I watched the Hockenston kid.
Yeah,
Noah Fant looked like he started to catch on just a little bit toward the end. Irv Smith Jr. was sitting behind Kyle Rudolph all day, so yeah. It wasn't like he was really finding anything up in Minnesota. A ton of things happening.
Yeah.
So young guys, I don't know necessarily if you can count on, and we've already had the Adam Shaheen experience. I'm looking for a veteran tight end to come in here. And if we've got to make sacrifice on the defense, we sacrifice on the defense. The defense didn't score as many points as they did last year. They didn't have as many sacks. Not as many sack opportunities, I will offer up to you also.
True, because they weren't up as much.
So I'd look at the percentage of sacks per pass plays. That's what I would look at.
Just look at the sack percentage from year to year. Yeah.
It'll be down, but I want to know how down it was and how bad it was.
I'll get it for you.
So give me that sack percentage, and obviously turnovers were a little bit different this year. I forget how many turnovers they ended up finishing with. I think the over-under was set at like 29 or 30,
please, and they
weren't even remotely close to that. But I do think they ended up with 20, maybe 21 turnovers. So
the average in the last decade, the average number, when you want to talk about the regression year to year, the average number of takeaways from the team that led the league 1 year to the next year was 12 fewer takeaways. 12.
So I don't think they had 24. That would be 12, right?
That 36, would be 12.
36, 24?
And they did not have 24 takeaways.
I don't think they had 24.
So it was even more. That's the average. That's what we kept telling you in the offseason, that you can't expect him to go out and take the football away 32 times. It ain't going to happen.
And either,
it does not happen.
Either Ridley, Wims. I don't know if Gabriel's ever going to play again for the Chicago Bears. And Miller's got to come back healthy with Robinson. If you've got those guys with Cordarrelle Patterson as your fifth wide receiver, well, maybe you're okay at your wide receiver position, but they do have to become comfortable with Trubisky back there.
One name that's been kicked about on the internet and the rumor mill, as far as the Bears offensive coordinator is concerned, is Chicago's very own and former Northwestern quarterback Mike Kafka, who hung around the league for quite some time, was with Andy Reid in Philadelphia a little bit. Backup quarterback. He hung around for a while. In 2017, he was with the Chiefs as an offensive, I think, quality control coach. He is now the quarterback's coach, a role that I think he has served in the last two seasons for Andy Reid. So he knows Matt Nagy a little bit. He's one of Andy's guys. That name's being bandied about. I don't know why Pat Shurmur would want to come here to not call plays. I just don't.
Doesn't make any sense.
You know, they're going to probably have to find a young guy like Kafka, right? A guy that's a quarterback coach.
Who's happy to get the title.
That wants the title, that he's progressing through his career. He's climbing the ladder. That's upper rung. That's good.
I wonder if he takes any advice from his coaches through the headphones on play calls. Or does that confuse him because of the limited amount of time that you have?
What's your experience with that? Do most play callers want to be left alone in that situation?
My experience is dealing with defensive guys and, what's working? Then you give them a little bit of feedback, what you like. I never liked running a zone blitz down toward the goal line, like on a 7-yard line. You got me going backwards.
Because
that's a little uncomfortable. You got me thinking kind of tepid going to the line of scrimmage.
Right.
You know, Jaron used to tell me, Dick, you say this is why I like to run it.
Really?
But, yeah, but this is why he wants to run it. He wants it in an obvious passing situation. That's when he wants to run it. But if they end up running something else to draw on it, and
then you're in
backwards,
trouble. You're going backwards.
I'm going backwards. It's not fun.
Yeah.
But then he's hoping the blitzer is going to get him. Wherever he's going, he's hoping the blitzer is going to get him. So that's the only thing. But they're receptive, not while they're calling and thinking, but when they get the break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're off the field, then we've made stops, so we get off the field and we get to communicate with the coach. That's when they're more receptive to information
right.
and stuff they're going to get.
312-332-3776. That's the phone number if you want to join Carmen and Yurko today. You can hit us up on Twitter. Yurko is at Yurko64. That's Yurko with the J and the number 64. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. Follow the show page on Instagram at Carmen and Yurko. It's as simple as that. Get our funny videos each and every day. At least we think they're funny. We make ourselves laugh, which is the most important thing.
I know they're funny. We use a prop today. I think everybody
we use a prop every day.
I think everybody will appreciate the prop we use today. And the topic of conversation, because it wasn't Bears, it was Chicago Blackhawks.
That's right.
And specifically yesterday's game.
Well, we did some Bears, too. We had
we popped a little bit on there.
Yeah,
let everybody check it out. they can tell us, give us some feedback what they thought about it.
Bears sack rate this year, Yurko, was, I got it for you right here, 5.6%.
5.6%.
Definitely going to be down from last year. The league leader this year, the Pittsburgh Steelers at 10.5%. The Dolphins dead last at 4.2%. So the Bears were, what, 28th this year? Let me get you last year while we're at here, too, because just we were talking about it. Now, obviously, like Yurk said, their opportunities were going to be way down because they had a lot of big leads last year. And when you got a lead and teams have to throw the ball and you've got Khalil Mack, you get to pin your ears back a little bit and just go wild,
yeah,
right? And they could not do that in as many instances this season. So I will get you last year's. Let me just update this.
No, take yourself a little bit of time here, kid.
All right.
I like
last
that.
Last year, the Bears' sack rate was 8.1%.
Close to the top of the league,
though. Close to the top. In the top 10 in the league. Yeah.
So if I take 8.6 and I take 4.2 and I end up getting 12.8, that means 6.4 is
8.1 last year, 5.6 this year.
No, I'm talking about overall. The leading team compared to the team that was in last, Miami.
Gotcha, yes.
And you put those two together, you divide by two, give me a median. They're below the median.
Yes.
When it came to sack rate. And that's disturbing.
They were ninth last year.
Yeah, that's disturbing.
Well, and Leonard Floyd, I mean, for crying out loud.
You didn't get the pass rush from Khalil Mack. He had 8.5 sacks. But at least you knew you were getting a pass rush, and you were getting effort out of him.
That's probably that's the two things that jump out most are what you said, that they just weren't in as many passing situations, and they lost Akeem Hicks for what? How many games did Akeem miss? Six, seven? What? He missed a lot of games.
He played in one game at the end. He missed the Minnesota game.
He went from the Raiders to one, then he played the second to last week.
So he played five or six games this year. He missed like 10 games.
Yeah, that's it.
So those two things are going to make a big difference in terms of your sack percentage.
And right? Even people that watch this team, you know, scouts that watch him and say, without Hicks, life becomes a little bit easier because he is a disruptive force in there. Yeah. And he's paid to be a disruptive force.
Yep.
There's no gray area. When he does things in the middle, he's disruptive as hell. So you want him in there. You need him in there. And when he's not there, boy, I tell you, it is a problem.
So whether or not Matt Nagy is going to relinquish play calling duties, we just don't think it's, should he or shouldn't he? I mean, that's one topic of discussion, I suppose. But will he actually do it, Yurko? And I just can't envision that happening. I honestly think that that's more unlikely and more far-fetched than Tom Brady coming here. 2 years into this thing, I don't think he can wave the white flag on his ability to call plays. I just don't see it happening. I'd be stunned if he did. But we'll find out as the postseason goes on. We'll ask Mark Potash and Dan Weider that question when they join us at Twin Peaks in Oak Brook tomorrow for our Bears Roundtable. Come out and see us tomorrow afternoon, as we're going to be out and about on a Thursday, not Friday this year. If you want to join us and if you have thoughts on it, 312-332-3776. Jeff Passan with some good stuff today, ESPN.com, about the baseball offseason, a whole bunch of stuff about what the Cubs might eventually do. It seems like the thing that's holding everything up right now is the Chris Bryant arbitration hearing about the grievance.
Right.
You know, how are they going to rule? Are they going to rule in Chris Bryant's favor or the team's favor? It seems very unlikely that Chris Bryant's going to win this grievance, right?
About a 2.5% chance of that happening.
But that is enough for any team that is dealing with the Cubs and discussing a potential trade for Chris Bryant. That is enough hanging over their head saying, hey, we can't really do this until we get some definitive clarity on what's going to happen. I mean, they can't. The deal changes a lot if a team acquiring Chris Bryant only gets him for 1 year. And I mean the deal changes a lot. And that's the root of all this. Will they rule in favor of Bryant saying, nope, you screwed around with this guy. He wins. He's a free agent after 2020. As it stands now, Chris Bryant's not a free agent until 2021, after the 2021 season. So that last year makes a big difference. So you've got that. You've got Josh Donaldson hanging out there waiting to sign. And I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. And that's led us to a point where things have kind of gotten sluggish. Look, this offseason has been much more enjoyable. Guys signed. Teams spent money. The White Sox spent a ton of money. The Yankees spent a ton of, like, guys signed. They got rewarded. They got big deals. There was news. There was action.
The Reds spent money.
The Reds, like, it's been fun. It hasn't been the death march that the last two off seasons were. And so I think baseball fans appreciate that. I'm sure MLB likes that because they've been in the news a little bit more, and that's good. Now we've hit the point where things are very sluggish and we're not sure where Donaldson's going to land, and we're waiting on this Chris Bryant thing to figure out what his real trade value is. But once all that falls into place, like once we get some clarity there, you know, then things are going to happen. And Passan was writing this today. The prevailing sentiment among executives remains that someone in the Mookie Betts, Francisco Lindor, Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado superstar grab bag is moving before spring training. But where? There's the rub. They're not quite sure because the last remaining free agent star could have a profound effect on teams' motivations. Third baseman Josh Donaldson remains available, and while the Twins aren't likely to enter the trade market, should they not sign him, the Braves and Nationals are plenty equipped to. Bryant would fit well in either spot. Interested teams do want to know the result of his grievance against the Cubs that would send him to free agency after this year instead of after the 2021 season. Arenado would work with Atlanta or Washington similarly well, although, according to sources, conversations with the Braves have gone nowhere, and the Nats haven't focused on acquiring him. As the Colorado Rockies search for potential trade partners, two teams in particular intrigue them, according to multiple sources, the Cubs and the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cubs would make sense if they move Bryant. They're not primed for some sort of rebuild as much as a refresh or reboot. An always difficult needle to thread, particularly if they hope to dip under the luxury tax threshold. One source characterized the Cubs as doing due diligence, as they've done throughout the winter with myriad trade conversations. But the notion of trading catcher Wilson Contreras and a high-priced, underperforming player in an Arenado deal, then flipping Bryant to revitalize a mediocre farm system, squares in the short and long term. And that's something we discussed with Cap earlier. Is that a win-win for the Cubs? If you can acquire Nolan Arenado, you would dump, let's say, in that deal. You'd have to give up Wilson Contreras. And let's say you dump Jason Hayward in that deal and his remaining money. But you acquire Nolan Arenado. Your problem is solved at third. You can then trade Chris Bryant for a bevy of prospects to help reload a farm system that has definitely stagnated because everything you've done the last couple of years while you were in your championship window. Is that a win-win for the Cubs?
It would be a change of pace. It would be a change of atmosphere, which is already happening with David Ross as your new manager. So you've already got that. It'd be like you're sending Bryant away because you can't sign him to a long-term deal, and you don't think he's the player he once was.
Or you don't want him. Yeah, that's the thing. Is it that you, is maybe it's not? Look, if you're going to bring in Nolan Arenado, you're ready to commit $35 million or $32 million a year to a guy for the next, what, how many, 8 years? What, Arenado just signed that deal. I mean, that deal's starting now. So you said something interesting there.
Yeah.
It's not that they don't think they can sign him. Maybe they just don't want to.
And he's not the 39 home run guy anymore. The 118 runs scored, the 107 RBIs.
The injuries have hurt the last couple of years.
He's not that guy anymore. That guy is a thing of the past. He's a figment of somebody's imagination.
I don't think so. Like you know my stance on Bryant. I think he's really good. I think if he's healthy, he's an elite player. He's an elite offensive player in this league. And I wouldn't be so quick to give him up. Now, if you're telling me you're getting Nolan Arenado, that's a different story. Like you're replacing one great player with another. Nolan Arenado's great, and I don't think there's too much in the splits
that tell you he's better defensively.
He's better defensively. He's awesome.
He's better defensively.
I don't think there's too much in the splits that tell you, nope, he can't play anywhere but Coors Field. Of course they're going to be different. And they were dramatically different in 2019. You know, Cap told us his OPS at home was like 1,500. I mean, that's crazy. But he's playing in Denver. I mean, you get it. His road OPS was still over 850. For his career, it's about 800. You know, most times you look at an OPS guy of about 800 and you feel pretty good. And who's to say that he can't still have some serious raking power at Wrigley Field? Wrigley's is a weird place. I mean, it can be.
The lines are 353 and 355.
It can be weird.
They're dramatic.
It's all dependent on the wind. Let's face it. You can go three straight weeks where, for whatever reason, that wind is blowing in and it's a pitcher's paradise. And then it can flip and it can be a home run hitter's
paradise. And it's a hitter's paradise.
Yeah.
And in fact, when you hit a foul ball, it's usually in the stands.
Yes.
There's not a ton of foul territory here.
There's not.
Oakland, Alameda County Stadium, wherever they play.
Yeah.
Foul
right.
territory.
a lot
acres.
Of acres.
You could have little baseball games next to Little League baseball games in the foul territories at Oakland Alameda County Stadium.
They're building a Boeing 737 in the foul territory.
Yeah, you could in foul territory over there. With the Cubs, with everything they've done with that, even though they've didn't they push the plate back?
The Cubs moved the wall back, didn't they?
They did.
Or no, did they move it forward because they wanted to add seats?
Less foul territory. Yeah. They put those right next to the dugout. They put in rows also.
Yeah.
They've eaten up all the foul territory they possibly can.
Yeah, there's not much foul territory.
At some point, you're going
to finally move the bullpens.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
To the outfields.
But they might have even encroached seats in there, too. Isn't that what they did? I believe that's what they did.
Why would the Major League Baseball players want those beautiful seats? Well, we could go ahead and sell those to corporations.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Isn't that what they've done?
Yeah. Mark, you want to do a quick trending? Anything
Carl,
good?
I would be honored to do a quick trending with you.
You would be.
Trending brought to you by Northwestern
Welcome
Basketball.
Back.
Thank you.
How was the meeting?
It was good. Yeah, informative.
Good.
Chicago's Big Ten team. Join the Wildcats this Saturday at 3:30. Who they're playing?
Michigan State.
No, they're playing Freddie Hoiberg.
Freddie Hoiberg.
And Nebraska had a big win last night over Iowa.
Yeah, that's right.
Tickets on sale now at NUSports.com.
Oh, how's Dr. Tom Davis doing over at Iowa?
Is
Dr. Tom still with us?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh, he's not coaching there anymore?
No, he's certainly
How about
not.
Mr. Alford? Is he doing well?
No,
not him either, huh?
I don't know if Dr. Tom is still
alive.
Dr. Tom is 81.
Is Frank Licklider there? I mean, who's there right now? Lamplighter?
No, it's McCaffrey still, isn't it?
There we go.
It's Fran McCaffrey. His son is on the team.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Billy McCaffrey.
Dr. Tom's still alive. Good. Thank goodness.
Beautiful.
81 years old.
Thank you. Thank heaven.
Go ahead, Randy.
All right, a couple things. As you guys mentioned before, Tom Brady was on Instagram today. He says he has a lot more to prove, more to do.
Well, he's a driven, motivated guy, isn't he?
Anthony Davis, negative MRI, if you saw last night. Bad, bad fall.
Yes.
I was on his tailbone, right, Carl?
Yeah, they said...
Well, that's what they call coccyx, my friend.
It's your coccyx, yeah.
100% correct.
You don't want to hurt that.
Do not.
You said coccyx.
Very expensive. I said coccyx.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yes.
In college football news...
Yeah?
Looks like Rocky Long from San Diego State is stepping down, and former Michigan head coach Brady Hoke will take over that position.
Look who's back again.
Bad news for Badger fans. Yesterday, Quintez Cephas announced that he was leaving, and then today Tyler Battish, their star center, is leaving as well. And then Jonathan Taylor's already declared, so things are looking too good for Wisconsin. And Carm, tonight is a very exciting moment, or I guess a night for people who used to love the show Party of Five. I don't know if you were a fan of Party of Five when it was on the air.
No.
Nev Campbell.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Nev
Jennifer
Campbell.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the younger girl was actually a mean girl. She was very good. I forgot her name, but she was good too.
That's Jennifer Loves Leighton Hewitt.
It's going to be on Freeform tonight. Party of Five will make a return.
Very exciting.
Yes.
That's at
8 o'clock tonight.
I can't wait to sign up for that tonight.
All right, Bears, Cubs, the offseason for the Cubs. What are they doing and what are they waiting for? Is it all based on the Chris Bryant grievance? 312-332-3776. Would you flip Arenado for Bryant, essentially? You'd move Bryant to a different team, of course, but does that sound like something the Cubs should be interested in right now? 312-332-ESPN. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
You're having a great Wednesday. Tomorrow is Thursday, and we're going to be out and about on a Thursday. Twin Peaks, Oak Brook, Brewhouse Legends, Snack Mix. Don't miss it. And we're going to do our Bears Roundtable. Mark Potash from the Sun-Times, Dan Wiederer from the Tribune will be on site with us.
It's a real think tank there.
It is a real think tank. We'll be breaking down all things Bears off season.
I don't know if it's going to be tumultuous. The coaches have already been fired offensively. You're bringing coaches in. We don't know who the offense coordinator is going to be. Is Ragone just going to move up? It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, do they definitely go on the outside? I mean, I'm assuming they will. For if they bump Ragone up, then there's a new quarterbacks coach, right? So
yeah, and
somebody's going to be coming.
What difference does it make?
Got to find an O-line coach.
Well, you got Juan Castillo you hired.
Oh, they did? When was that?
Yeah, last week.
Oh, I missed that.
He was with him in Philadelphia with the Eagles.
I remember Juan Castillo.
Yeah, Juan Castillo.
I was in Aruba. Maybe I missed that.
You were in Aruba, so you missed that one.
Ronnie Stanley, Zach Martin, and Quentin Nelson is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Oh, my God. Like, those three guys were all coached by Harry Hiestand, the all-pro team this year. Remember the debate about Quentin Nelson coming out 2 years ago? Is, should you really take a guard that high? Man, when I guess when he's that good, yeah, you feel okay about it. He's a unbelievable.
He's a road grader, and he's
agile. Explain what that means.
A road grader, that's the big thing that gets on the road and just chews up the road and destroys the road so you can lay down a new road. That's what a road grader is. That's what he is. But he also has the agility to pick up on pass, and that comes from his karate background.
Oh, yeah, the hands.
Do you know that?
No, is that right?
Oh, yeah. He's into the martial arts. And he was, you know, as a younger man, and that kind of helped him develop a little balance, some of that core that he has.
He's unbelievable.
And you look at him on some of the blitz pickups that he's responsible for,
yeah,
and what he can do. You look at some video of Quentin Nelson and what he sees, what he recognizes and gets over with balance. He could put a pop on somebody, too. I've seen him. He's hit people.
I guess you just want to make sure you're right when you're spending a high draft pick like that on a guard. But they obviously, Chris Ballard got it right.
So
I mean,
you got Fanica's, Alan Fanica's of the world, Steve Hutchinson's of the world. Those guys went in the first round.
The Hog Hannah's of the world.
Right. Randall McDaniel went in the first round. People knew Randall McDaniel was going to be something special.
Right.
I gotta make sure Randall went in the first round. He's a Hall of Famer, though.
He is a Hall of Famer. Yeah. I don't know. I can't tell you where he was drafted, but Hog Hannah was a first rounder for sure. Fanica was a first rounder for sure.
Yes. Yeah. No, I know that because, you know, Fanica played at LSU.
Sounds right.
I know it's right. Yeah. Tougher than nails, that kid.
Yeah, boy, I would love what I would do for a player like Quentin
Nelson.
Remember
why they had to let Hutchinson go in Seattle?
I think because they paid Walter Jones.
Yeah, they franchised one. They couldn't franchise the other.
Yeah.
So they recognize, okay, Walter Jones is a tackle. He's important.
How good was that line?
And then they put the poison pill up in Minnesota.
That's right.
That line was great. And Sean Alexander was the beneficiary.
He was the MVP.
Yes.
Why do you think that was?
Well,
not to take anything away from Sean Alexander. He was pretty great. But, I mean, you got, like, maybe two Hall of Famers blocking for you. I mean, one's already in, obviously. Hutchinson might get in the Hall of Fame someday.
Like, yeah.
That makes a pretty big difference.
I think both of those guys are going to. The final 15,
Walter
I think,
Jones
eventually.
Yeah.
All those guys are going to get in, too. First round pick, 19th pick overall, Randall McDaniel
there
out of Arizona State.
Top 20 pick, Yurko.
And he always had a cockeyed stance, kid. When I tell you, his left foot was off to the side at such an angle, you never thought he was going to be able to put any weight on it and do anything.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter what his stance was. He was so quick and so fast. I mean, like lightning, this guy was.
Somebody on Twitter was asking Yurk, they had said, hey, Carm, ask Yurk to kind of go through the finer points of the zone blocking, which seems to be kind of like all the rage in the NFL now, right? Aren't most offensive lines zone blocking schemes?
Remember the 48, 47 zone play where they start out and then it's the big cutback play? So what they are is they're doubles. They're doubles on your two main guys, and then they're working up to the backer. Not a power-type situation. They want to get you moving left, right, and they want to get their people up off onto the backers. They want to stay square.
You're kind of going into an area looking for someone to block?
You know who you're going to block. The two guys are taking this guy and another guy, and then the two guys are taking that guy and another guy. Your two defensive tackles they're going after. The defensive end might be the block that you're looking at and what the running back's going to read. At least that's the way Juan Castillo described it. It's available online if you want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Juan Castillo describes zone run blocking.
Yeah.
And that guy's the key, and that's what the running back is going to read. But everybody's working square. Everybody's occupying guys and getting fits and just taking their guy where he wants to end up going. And you're reading what's happening. Okay? Because there's two-on-two. If the linebacker flies out of there, then the guard in front of that double has to start to go, and the guy then the backside ends up keeping it. If the linebacker tries to run through off that double, the guy on the inside has to come take that linebacker, and then the other guy continues with the defensive lineman. So there's two doubles working up to linebackers, with the key being the front side tackle. And that
instead
run
instead of the old school that run
can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Well, you're always solidifying because of stances. I mean, slants.
Slants.
Yeah, you're always taking, the guard's always taking a step. The center's always taking a step to help the guard. Everybody's taking that step to help each other. In case you've got slants, you want to be able to cut that off with two. Fit up, occupy, stay square, and stay with your guy so he can't come off and make the tackle. And then if guys are flying and over-pursuing or they're turning and they're running, the running back's going to cut that back. Mm.
Yeah, because that was, are the Bears equipped for the zone blocking game? Well, I mean, I'm assuming they feel...
The guys, they were doing zone blocking during the season.
Right. That's what I mean. I know.
At the end of those games, when you've seen those guys coming out, no, that wasn't the problem. Those actually were some successful runs toward the end of the year.
Yeah.
Where you saw zone blocking techniques that were being utilized. They were actually getting push. It was a time when Montgomery wasn't getting hit until he was 3-4 yards down the field. That's kind of a nice bonus.
Kind
of. Who was it you were doing that against? And then they stuffed guys up in the box and they wanted to make you throw the ball. They were having a lot of success running the ball at the end of the year.
I don't know about a lot, but I mean, no, a little bit better. When Mitch finally started to run a little bit. Look, the Dallas game Mitch ran, they were very successful. You know?
It was a game Montgomery had some good yardage in.
Maybe the Dallas game? Is that what you're thinking of?
I'm thinking it could be the Dallas.
Probably.
But they were using zone blocking on that. Hey, you step one way, you occupy your man, you fit up, and you go into the next guy. That's what you're looking to do. And the running back's got his choice of what he wants to do. If the guy over the offensive tackle, if he's being blocked and he's getting, you know, he decided to go inside, then he's going to keep it outside. If that guy's fighting to the outside, then he's going to start to turn it up and find his lane. But the key is offensive linemen stay square, fit, occupy, and run and work with the guy. I always said the thing with defensive line play, and the reason Zorich would get in trouble every once in a while, because Zorich would peak. Zorich would get up on his tippy toes. Then he'd start to run with the play, and as he's running, he's being pushed. So he ends up getting pushed 4 or 5 yards downfield. You're making the tackle, but it's 4, 5, 6 yards downfield. You know, the defense that's played well is you attack, you get a yard across, you don't run anywhere fast. Guys that turn their shoulders and run to the sidelines, you're killing your defense.
Yeah.
Saw a play last week in the playoffs where the guard went up on the three technique, and the guy who's running hell-bent for election out there created a hole. Him trying to get the hell out of die, you're not reached. A defensive lineman is not reached if that running ball doesn't break outside and go between him and the tackle. Sometimes you can play the game, you can play the hole with the body of the individual that's over you, like the guard.
Yeah.
If he wants to overreach me, well, I can push his body into the hole and there's no hole there.
Right, yeah.
But I can't go flying out of there just because that guy is. At some point, I could stand my ground, cut back, and go up and make the play. Ultimately, the football is the issue and where the football is. You can't get influenced by the individual in front of you and go flying out.
Assuming Tom Brady's a pipe dream, what's going to be the best fit in the offseason as they add somebody to that quarterback room? Because they're going to.
Young quarterback in the draft.
So no Mariota for you, no
It's a young quarterback Andy in Dalton. The draft. The flexibility on this team is they could go with 3 quarterbacks if they wanted to have a veteran quarterback. But they I would get a young quarterback in the draft. I would look at every guy coming out.
Yeah.
Wherever they're coming from, everyone, I would analyze them. I'd go back and watch their college tape, and I'd take a look at them. Now, Jacob Eason was the starter. I think that's his name, the kid from Washington.
Yes.
He was a starter at Georgia until he got hurt.
Right.
Fromm came in. Then they didn't go back to him.
They never went back.
He transferred. He said, I'm not going to stick around and do this. I'm an All-American, for heaven's sake. So he ends up transferring to Washington, sits. Now he's coming out. I'd take a look at him. There's a reason why you were the number one quarterback coming out of high school. Whatever happened at Georgia, then you went up to Washington. Now you look at him and you look at the mechanics, you look at what he can or can't do, and then you decide, okay, I'm going to put a grade on this guy. This guy should go at this spot. Can I be patient and can I wait for this guy to go ahead and become available in the second or third round, and then I capitalize and take a young quarterback? Your hair hurts, Jalen Hurts.
That's going to be the intriguing one. Like, did Kyler Murray's season give everybody some hope that players like that in today's NFL can thrive? I mean, you know, Kyler Murray completed about 65% of his passes this year. The touchdown interception ratio is not quite 2-1, and that's not good, but he's also a rookie quarterback on a team that wasn't very good. He got sacked a lot. But, like, did he still had some good moments through for a lot of yards? I mean, like, does that give you some hope that players like that can succeed? And is Jalen Hurts a possibility for them with one of those 2 second-round picks?
Sure. Again, you got to put the grade on him. You've got to look at him. You've got to see what Kiper and McShay are doing. You've got to put your own analysis on it. Maybe you think one of these guys that's going in the second or third might be one of the better quarterbacks that's out there. Yeah. Maybe you've got him rated third.
And in fairness, Hurts is bigger, I think, by a couple of inches. Over, I mean, Kyler Murray's small. I mean, honestly, like, vertically, Kyler Murray's like my height, you know? I'm average. I'm 5'10 and a half. I mean, like, that's it, Yerk. That's, you know, and it's okay to be an average American male, but when you're playing quarterback, you normally think, eh, give me the 6'4 guy. But like Kyler Murray played well, and I think Hurts is a little bit over 6 feet in fairness. But
I'm going to give you names. You tell me what you think they're going to go. Joe Burrow, number one.
Well, he's going number one.
Tua. Yeah.
Tua's probably, I don't know, with the injury, it's
first
hard.
Round, I'm asking, will he be in the first round, yes or no?
I'll say yes.
Justin Herbert from Oregon.
I'll say yes.
First round, yes or no?
Yes.
Jordan Love, Utah State.
Utah State, second round.
Okay, you got him as a second rounder
well,
already.
I shouldn't say that. What do I know about this?
No.
There's going to be three quarterbacks in the first round. Right. I'll give you those three.
Okay, there's three. So sometimes there's five quarterbacks taken in the first round. We've seen that before also. So my point is to you, we've got to start looking
at who's
who's going to be available in that second round. Jacob Eason, where do you have him?
I'd say not first
round. Kid out of Washington. Not first round. You got him second or third round. Okay, those are your top five quarterbacks right now.
Yeah.
As they're ranked coming out after the bowl season. So at least two of those guys might be available for you, a team that needs a young quarterback because you've got decisions to make on Trubisky. That's it. That's what you've got to figure out, and that's what you've got to do. You've got to look at them. You've got to rank them 1 through 5 yourself and see if you can get a deal somewhere.
Free agent or draft for a backup quarterback? It's a good question.
Do you think fans would rather have anyone but Trubisky next year? Like, do you think?
Apparently there are still some Trubisky truthers out there, you know, that think. I wouldn't say every fan thinks that.
Like, is there any fan that wouldn't take Tom Brady over Mitch Trubisky next year?
That'd be crazy. Come on. Right? That's pure lunacy.
So here's another one.
But the Brady thing is still such a far fetched.
They got Burrow ranked first. They got Herbert ranked second. They got Tua third.
Yeah.
They've got Jake Fromm fourth. But didn't Fromm say he was staying in college?
I thought Fromm was finally done, isn't he?
He's got another year left.
Fromm's like Evan Eschmeyer. Yeah. Hasn't he been down there forever?
No.
Are you kidding?
He's like Casey Calvary. It's like he never left college.
You gotta be kidding me. Jake Fromm is still going to be down there next year.
They got Fromm at 4. They've got Jacob Eason at 5. Jamie Newman from Wake Forest.
No, I don't know much about Jamie Newman.
By the way, Fromm announced that he's going to the draft. He's leaving Georgia.
Okay. Yeah. He's got another year of eligibility?
I thought I heard it another way, but that's fine. He is leaving.
In the 12 o'clock hour, so like an hour ago, he announced.
Oh, is that right?
Instagram. There you go.
Okay.
Kellen Mond, Texas A&M.
Yeah. Who did not have a great year, by the way.
Steven Montez. Sometimes it's your team that doesn't have a great year, and you happen to be the quarterback of it.
He did not have a great year.
Jordan Love, they got ranked 9th here from Utah State. So you see how the rankings are already different in certain areas. So Jordan Love is 4th in one, 9th in the other. All of a sudden, is Jordan Love a guy you take a look at and say, hey, maybe the 9th quarterback in this thing, I can get in the 3rd round.
Some people are going to naturally downgrade Jordan Love because the competition, too, right?
Utah State's still Division One.
Well, of course, I know. But it's not
like he's playing at Eastern or anything like that.
No, I know, but he's not playing in the SEC or the Big Ten. I mean,
so James Morgan is another name. KJ Costello, Nate Stanley, the quarterback from Iowa, Khalil Tate. The kid out of Texas, Sam Ellinger.
Sam Ellinger, yeah.
The Michigan State quarterback
is
Lewerke.
Brian Lewerke, yeah.
And then, Shea Patterson. We've gone too far. If I get to Shea Patterson, we've gone too far.
You want to stop there?
I'm stopping right before that. But there's your list of quarterbacks. That's what you take a look at. You analyze them. You get your quarterback and offense coordinator in a room together, and you start figuring quarterback coach. And you got to figure out what the hell's going on.
So is it add a veteran free agent? Is it draft a quarterback? I mean, maybe is it both? Yurko might be right.
I'm on both. Get a veteran. This team can afford to have three quarterbacks. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says.
Nate Stanley will be Ben Roethlisberger, by the way. He's going to be that good.
You think Nate Stanley's going to be
really good.
Wow, boy, that's big praise, man.
Yes. Guy's got a rocket for an arm, 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, he's a handsome lad.
Yeah, he's a handsome lad.
Why couldn't Iowa score this season, then?
Yeah, Iowa really did not have a good offense. And he got two... I don't know, Merck.
You can book it.
You're booking it right now that he's going to be Ben Roethlisberger?
Done.
They weren't very good on offense at all. I don't know, Merck. I'm going to have to disagree with it. And the rocket arm. I mean, look, Josh Allen's got a rocket arm. And every once in a while, you look at it and you go, holy cow. But Josh Allen's got a long way to go. I mean, he's not even close to being Big Ben. Yeah, he runs well and he's tough to tackle, but he's very inconsistent. He's inaccurate. In an era where just about every quarterback completes 65% of their passes, he's not even completing 60% in his first two seasons. So the rocket arm is nice, but it doesn't always translate to success in the NFL. Big John's in Glen Ellen on ESPN 1000. Hey, John.
Hey, boys. Gotta go free agent route. I never remember a free agent quarterback class where you had so many guys that won Super Bowls in it, let alone guys that have been to the game. And the Bears are not that far away that you can draft somebody and hope, you know, a rookie's going to fill in for Mitch. No, get a free agent that can take them to the game. You can't go the double route because you can't draft somebody and get a free agent because you need other stuff. You need receiving upgrades, tight ends, line and stuff. So you got to go.
But other than Brady, John, who's the quarterback? I mean, what, you want Eli? I mean,
no.
Eli, Rivers, even Flacco won a Super Bowl. We're talking about a guy to come in and pressure Mitch, maybe guide Mitch or step in if Mitch can't get it done.
All right, John, thanks, buddy. Those names just don't do anything for me.
You can keep Joe Flacco. They finally recovered from Flacco in Baltimore.
They finally got Drew Locke going in Denver, too. Scott's downtown on ESPN 1000. Hey, Scott.
How about A.J. McKiernan out of Texas? His contract's up. He's paid $1 million. Pay him $3 million for 2 years and put him in there. Three-time national championship winner.
McKiernan's been like the guy waiting for years to finally get his shot somewhere, and it just hasn't happened, right? Scotty, thanks. I mean, for years. Haven't we been wondering, like, when is A.J. McKiernan going to get his shot? And played a little bit a couple years ago when Dalton was hurt, right? And but how many passes has A.J. McKiernan? Look, he's been in the league now for, he's got more attempts than I thought. 108 out of 173, Yurko. The most was 2015 when he played seven games. He started three of those games. He went 2-1. Completed 66% of his passes. He threw six touchdowns to two interceptions. And like he's still been waiting to get a chance to start somewhere. And since that season, 16, 17, 18, 19, you know how many games he started?
How many?
One. Should have won game this year. That's it since that season. You know, now you're talking about a 29-year-old quarterback that hasn't played a whole heck of a lot that's still been waiting. Maybe he's the right guy for this situation where he's been in the league, probably pick up the system pretty quickly because he understands the offense. I mean, he's not been in an offense quite like this, I don't think. I'm looking at the guys he's been with. He was with Gruden last year, so he's got a little bit of West Coast, I guess, right? So he can understand some of the terminology a little bit. Maybe some of the stuff Nagy likes to do. They're not carbon copies of each other or anything, but maybe he is the right guy now. You know, somebody that'll be cheap, that if Mitch gets hurt or if you finally want to move on from him, you turn it over to him and give him a shot. I mean, none of these names wow you, though. That's the point.
Both. You need both. You need a veteran guy and you need a draft guy. Whether you like it or not, and you got to keep three on your roster going into next year because, again, you got a question mark. You got a question mark with Trubisky. You don't have to like what you have, but you got a question mark. Feeling sorry for him and worrying about his feelings have gone out the windows here now. We're coming up on year four.
Yeah.
I have no feelings for him.
No, your feelings are you want the Bears to win.
That's it.
That's what I want.
I don't worry about whether he's going to go into his locker room and he's going to cry, get in the fetal position with his thumb in his mouth in the corner. I don't care.
I mean, that's not even fair to him. I don't think he would do that.
That's fine. I don't care whether it is or isn't, but you can't worry about a guy's feelings.
I don't care either. I'm with you. I don't think he'd
his
curl
sensitivities
up in
the either. Comes out like the machine. I can't believe they got another quarterback. Me so sad. I can't believe me going to clean locker five times today.
He's so sad.
It's just like, what the?
Sounds like soup. 312-332-3776. That's the number. We're going to talk to Field Yates coming up. Bears issues. Go around the NFL a little. The coaching hires. What he likes. What he doesn't like. And we'll preview the division round a little bit. Field Yates is next. More your phone calls on the Bears. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Field Yates on Carmen and Yurko.
Sometimes people do things in fantasy football emotionally and interest-wise, right?
NFL and fantasy football talk with Field Yates every week on Carmen and Yurko.
What if there's a 5% chance that he does play at a high level, a top 12 quarterback level? This is your one chance to take advantage of it.
ESPN's Field Yates on ESPN 1000.
Through the football season, each and every Wednesday at 1:30, he's at Field Yates on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Save us as a favorite on TuneIn. You get all of our podcast action there. Getting ready for the divisional round. We're getting ready for Tom Brady to come to Chicago, Field. What do you think?
Is that happening? I haven't heard that one yet.
It's happening. We're breaking news.
I haven't checked Twitter in 20 seconds, so maybe I've missed something.
Do you think, well, look, he's going to play. I mean, I think what he said at the podium after the game over the weekend, you know, the Instagram post this morning, I don't know he's got much more to prove, but he's obviously a very driven and motivated dude. So he's out there telling everybody on Instagram that he's got more to prove and this isn't the end. I mean, he's going to play in 2020. Where's it going to be?
I still think it's going to end up being New England, guys, because, and this is a challenge I sort of pose to people, is where else would Tom Brady make sense? And I think if you went team by team, like there's only a couple of options that I think are even logical. And then you look at those options just based off of where they're at with their roster or their salary cap or their quarterback situation. And then let's say you whittle that down to a group of two or three. Then just build a pros and cons list. And it feels like the Patriots' pros way outweighs the pros of other teams that might even be reasonable considerations for Brady. So I think he winds up back in New England, but at this point, it's just a guess.
In your opinion, who would those reasonable teams be if it weren't New England?
You know, I've seen a lot of speculation about the Chargers, so I sort of introduced that one into the possibilities. And, you know, it's Los Angeles, it's a market, but I always tell people, like, Tom Brady doesn't need Los Angeles to be relevant. I mean, heck, he would be less relevant if he played for the Chargers than if he plays for the Patriots, I would think in some ways, right? Maybe I'm wrong.
No,
maybe,
I agree with you. I do.
Yeah, listen, Los Angeles is not suddenly selling 37,000 PSLs because Tom Brady's coming to town. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, go play in a soccer stadium. Like, I've been to Chargers training camp. For the past, you know, in previous years. And I get it. They're still sort of like nomadic team. But there's like 100 people there. You go to a Patriots. The Patriots have like 25,000 people at practices at times during training camp. And I get it. Part of that is because of Tom. But I'm just telling you, like, if Tom's not there next year, it's still going to be a really popular thing to do. Football is just a huge part of the fabric right now in New England. And I don't know that if you go somewhere like Los Angeles, then that place automatically, you know, an obvious candidate for Tom Brady. I look around and don't see an obvious spot. I've heard Tennessee, but Ryan Tannehill, right? I mean, like, what are you going to do to Ryan Tannehill if you're the Titans? Like, I think you'd go with him, wouldn't you? So I've seen a lot of suggestions. None of them really make sense to me as a place that's a better spot than being here in New England for Tom Brady.
Dan Shaughnessy was on the station from the Boston Globe earlier this week with Cap, and he said he thinks Tom Brady would listen to the Bears. Do you think he would?
I guess. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a franchise rich with tradition, right? It is a franchise that 2 years ago was outstanding. I think that's complicated, guys. So,
yeah,
I mean,
I do.
As much as Mitch Trubisky is, and I know I saw everybody's reaction on Twitter when Ryan Pace said last week, that Mitch is the starter going into the season and we're confident. I think it's possible that the Bears do bring a veteran for competition. But if you bring in Tom Brady, it means that Mitch Trubisky is done, over with, no longer a part of the future, right? I mean, that's just a fact. So I think if they're going to bring in a veteran quarterback, it's much more likely to be a guy. It's kind of like Mike Glennon when they first drafted Mitch. It's a player that, you know, you understand that when you're doing it, you're signing him, but he may not be the long-term answer. He may be a one-year answer for you.
Yerk thinks the Bears should add a veteran quarterback and draft a quarterback. Would you agree?
I mean, at this point, I have no issue with any number of – I really don't. Like, I don't know that there's ever too many quarterbacks you can have on your roster. So, I suppose it's a matter of where you're drafting that quarterback, but you know, and obviously understand they don't have a first round pick, but I don't think it's ever a bad strategy to take a swing at a quarterback prospect.
Of the free agent tight ends, who do you think will be available to go to other teams, and who do you think will be franchise and or transitioned?
I think the most obvious franchise tag candidates for tight ends would be Austin Hooper and Hunter Henry.
The two guys.
Yeah, it's the two guys we want.
Two guys we want.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And Hooper especially. Hooper, the Falcons have always been willing to be aggressive with retaining their own free agents, always been willing to pay top dollar. The Chargers are in an interesting offseason ahead. We just talked about whether Brady would be a fit, but they've got to figure out what they're going to do with Phillip Rivers, or maybe what Phillip Rivers is going to do with his own football future. But those two young tight ends make the most sense as guys that will be franchised or transitioned and probably not hit the open market. Both of them very good, both of them very productive, and both homegrown talents.
What have you thought of the coaching hires so far?
You know what I've realized more and more is that who cares what we think at the time of them, right? I really don't, like, do we need to put that much stock into what we say about a coaching hire right after it happens? Because I think a year from now, there's an excellent chance that the three of us will be having a conversation and saying that Mike McCarthy was the most successful new head coach this year. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because he's got the best combination of talents amongst any of the rosters, right? I mean, like, I'm sitting here looking at Joe Judge going to New York. Daniel Jones could be a nice player, but, like, am I really confident that Daniel Jones and this Giants offense and defense is going to turn things around and win 10 games next year? No, I don't care who they hired, for that matter. But the Cowboys could go 12-4 next year, and it would not be a surprise at all. And Mike McCarthy would be looking like, you know, he would be looking like the coach that we thought of him as when he was leading the Packers to the playoffs every single season.
I mean, the Joe Judge thing did seem to come out of nowhere, right?
A little bit, yes. But I would remind people that the interview process can really go a long way in determining how a team feels about a prospect. And it could be that he sort of surprised them with how awesome he was during their interview. In some ways, it's reminiscent, I would say, of what happened with Matt LaFleur last year. You guys, obviously, Matt LaFleur was on the radar for head coaching gigs, but he was the first head coach hired last year. It was a year ago yesterday by the Packers, the first. And there were, what, 9 vacancies last year, 8 vacancies? Everybody was like, wow, Matt LaFleur is the first one off the board? What about all the other top coaching candidates everybody is talking about right now? And Matt, 13-3 in his first year, and certainly had a lot of resources to work with this year, but done a really nice job with the Packers. And they said, our interview was spectacular with Matt. He was tremendous.
Hmm. Field Yates is our guest. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. I hope I have this right. I think I either heard or read that it's 4 minority coaches in the NFL. If that's the number, that's an eighth of the league. I mean, is the Rooney Rule, functioning as it should in these NFL coaching searches?
No, I don't think that it is. I think that's pretty clear, is that the rule is not really the issue. The question is, are the people that are supposed to be following the rule putting enough legitimacy behind candidates that are minorities? So the rule states you have to interview one minority candidate. And, you know, part of the problem is that a lot of these teams are interviewing the same coach as their mind to satisfy the Rooney Rule, right? I mean, Eric Bieniemy interviewed with the Browns, the Giants, the Panthers. That's 3 out of the 5 openings right there. Like, right away, you know, he's checking the box for 3 out of the 5 openings. Like, you know, he's only going to get, at best, one of those jobs. It looks like right now he'll get none of those jobs. But it feels like there's got to be a more concerted effort to find a way to ensure that there's more diversity amongst head coaches. Understanding there's only 32 jobs, but still, 4 out of 32 being minorities feels like a disproportionately low number. It just feels like a rule that the NFL needs to address at some point this offseason.
Marvin Lewis was one of the other minority candidates that interviewed for one of the jobs, and he came out today and basically said, listen, you can make them interview, but you can't force owners hire. You know, they're going to hire who they want. You know, you can't make them hire somebody that they don't want. So it's like, where do you go from there? Do you mandate that this has to be this way?
I don't know how you can do that.
Sure. And I've heard a couple of suggestions, and you know, I've thought of some of my own, and you know, I think we've heard a lot about people wisely noting the pipeline issue, right? There aren't that many minority coordinators, and the coordinator pipeline is one that definitely helps out the head coaching pipeline. So I wonder if it's worth instituting a rule that before you hire a coordinator, you have to interview a minority candidate for every coordinator job as well. I was talking about this with Sarah Spain last night. There is no singular move you can make that rectifies the issue, but there are a lot of small steps you can take, I think, that can really go a long way.
When I was in Green Bay, Mike Holmgren was the coach. We had 2 coordinators that were black. We had Sherman Lewis. We had Ray Rhodes. Ray Rhodes became a head coach.
Yeah, Eagles, right?
Sherman Lewis didn't.
Yep.
Why?
Why?
That's
because Ray could coach.
Why?
I don't know.
Why? That's what I'm asking you. You know, Ray left us, went back to San Francisco. You know, and I know both of them. I was around both of them.
Yeah.
So, do you want an answer? I can give you the answer.
One could coach. One
I don't know the answer.
Ray was a legitimate coach with real great knowledge in a command of his players.
Yeah.
Where Sherm didn't have the opportunity because Mike was calling the plays. And Sherm didn't really have a command of his guys because Mike was the one that took command of the guys.
Sure.
So even though he had the coordinator position, he didn't have the command.
Right.
So that's why one did get the opportunity and one didn't. And Greg Blasch always told me, who's our defensive line coach, a black assistant coach, Greg told me that he'd always go on the interview. If they asked him to interview for the head coaching, he said, I always do it. He goes, because you've got to get the experience of doing it.
Yeah.
That way, when there's a real legitimate opportunity,
right.
He goes, I would have had those 3-4 opportunities already to get things
done. Even if you know you're not going to get it.
Even if you know you're not doing it. And you might even be going there to appease the Rooney Rule.
And then on the go ahead, Phil. Go ahead. And I'm going to follow up on one other thing. But
I was just going to say that, you know, it is. We've had this conversation. It feels like every year, right around the middle of January, we're having this conversation. There's probably more nuance to it than just not enough minority candidates are getting head coaching jobs. But I think the NFL should be actively exploring ways each offseason because they've stayed status quo now for, a while. And it feels like there's been this kind of frustration for half a dozen years at least.
Yeah, I know. You're right. And separate from the Rooney Rule discussion, just about coaching searches in general, I can't remember who wrote this. If it might have been Peter King, somebody this week had said that it's still sort of unfair for the teams that are in the playoffs. Maybe a little bit easier for the teams with the bye. It gives them more opportunity. I think the league has even tried to accommodate, if I'm not mistaken, though, guys that have to play in wild card weekend, a guy like Kevin Stefanski, let's say. But they obviously have so many other commitments while their teams are in the playoffs. And I think Peter wrote, why don't they just put a moratorium on this until the playoffs are over? I think that's awfully hard because the way the league has structured the calendar and they go from one thing to the next. I mean, before, when the Super Bowl ends, you're rolling into the combine for crying out loud. Like, teams kind of want to be set. They want to know. So I don't know that that's doable, but is it stacked against the guys that are in the playoffs a little bit?
I mean, so I guess the counterpoint to that would be you'd have to not just prevent hires from taking place prior to the Super Bowl. You'd have to prevent interviews. Right. And because, you know, if you have a guy interviewing, like, it's just going to be a handshake agreement, right?
Right, I mean, exactly.
Like, Brian Flores was going to be the Dolphins head coach. They just acted like no one knew it until the Super Bowl was over last year, right? We see it every year. Dan Quinn became the Falcons head coach after coaching to the Super Bowl. You know, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
So, and there's probably some gray area, too, if a team can't interview a coach until after the season, the Super Bowl is over, as you mentioned with the calendar. I think there's a lot of problems with sort of the variety of different suggestions that have been positioned, but it's at least worth healthy conversation.
Yeah, the Dogs ruled the weekend in Wild Card Weekend. Yeah. You think some upsets are happening in Divisional Weekend?
I don't think so. I feel like this could be a pretty chalky weekend myself. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like between the real wear and tear of having to play an extra game, plus how good the four teams are that are playing at home this weekend. The team that I actually think has the best chance of pulling the upset is the Seahawks because they're always in close games. But that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if all four home teams hold serve.
But the Seahawks are just beat half to hell. I mean, when you run out of so many healthy offensive players, I mean, if it weren't for the brilliance of Russell Wilson and, you know, Metcalf has come alive here as of late, obviously, but they'd be sunk without him. I mean, they just, you're down linemen, you're down to Marshawn Lynch at running back. I'm not overly impressed with the Green Bay Packers, but it seems like that's a tall order for them to go on the road again and win in Green Bay.
And here's a legitimate question. Can the Packers win if Aaron Rodgers throws for less than 200 yards?
Oh, man, they can because they've been that good defensively this year. They get pressure at such a ridiculous rate. That's kind of been their formula.
That might happen.
Yeah,
Aaron Rodgers may not throw for 200 yards, and he can still win that game.
You're probably right.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
Field, enjoy Divisional Weekend. We'll preview Championship Sunday next week. Can't wait.
Can't
Can't wait, guys. Look forward to it.
See you, buddy. Thanks. That's Field Yates, at Field Yates on Twitter. It's a good discussion there, Yurko. And more great NFL Bears discussion tomorrow with our roundtable when we are live at Twin Peaks in Oak Brook with Brewhouse Legend Snack Mix. Come by and see us for a great lunch, an ice-cold beer. Just get away from the office for an hour. And from what time, Merck? 12:30 to 1:30?
Yeah, 1:30.
We're going to do our roundtable with Mark Potash from the Sun-Times, who's been covering the Bears in the NFL forever. And Dan Wiederer, who has also had many years covering NFL teams, the Vikings, the Bears. So they will both be there, and we'll do a little roundtable on how to fix the Bears and what they're going to try to accomplish in this offseason. Plus, on Instagram and on the show tomorrow, we'll be releasing our top 20 Blackhawks of all time. We were tasked with coming up with the 20 Blackhawk legends of all time.
And we came up probably with about 25, 26 names.
Yeah, some guys we had to leave off. We're, you know, and people are going to complain, and it's fine.
And then I came up with a name today. We're like, whoa, we might, we may have forgotten, but we got him on the list.
So I think
we're
it wasn't Patrick Kane.
It was not Patrick Kane.
He's on the list.
Yes. We didn't exclude him out of the top 10 of the decade like some fools did.
He's on the list, Yurko.
That was amazing, even when I saw it.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, you go to Hockey Reference and you're like, what, does he have? Yeah, he does.
You don't even need to go to Hockey Reference.
He's got most points of that whole group, and he's got three Stanley Cup titles.
Yes.
How do you forget?
A Conn Smythe, a Hart Trophy. Yeah. Like, it's insane.
I mean, what are you doing?
I don't know.
How do you even do that?
I don't know. The off-ice stuff, I guess. Maybe they were home. I really don't know.
I don't know, but that shouldn't
count.
We're
just talking about hockey players, and we're going to rank the 20 greatest Blackhawks. And you will feel free to pound us on Instagram and Twitter because you don't like our list. That's fine.
The name that didn't make the list that I wanted on the list was Ivan Boldarev, mid-70s.
Problem is he didn't have a real long Hawks career.
I know, only 300-some-odd games.
You know? Another name, like a guy like Eric Nestorenko, who was, great. Plus, he was in Youngblood, for crying out loud.
Yes, he was.
You know?
Taught him how to fight.
He taught Youngblood, Dean Youngblood, right?
Whatever
how to fight.
His name was.
I'm trying to remember. What was Rob Lowe's first name?
How am I supposed to figure that out?
I think it was Dean, right?
It was Dean, yeah.
Dean Youngblood, yeah.
Was Patrick Swayze in that movie?
Yes, he was.
Remember
what Eric Nestorenko tells him when he's roughing him up on the ice, and he says, you could learn to punch in the barn, but you got to learn to survive on the ice.
Wait, does he play his dad in the
movie? Yes! Okay. That's former Hawk Eric Nestorenko.
Seriously?
Yes.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, he plays the dad. Yes, and it was a Patrick Swayze. Keanu Reeves is in that movie.
I did not know that.
Young Blood from the 80s. Go back and watch it, everybody. I'm trying to catch up on all the movies because it's voting season, and we're members of SAG-AFTRA, so we get to vote.
Yes, we do.
And the SAG Awards. And, you know, you
Screen get... Actors
the
Guild.
The Garvin. Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
We are in the same union as the Screen Actors Guild.
That's right.
And we get the screeners, so they encourage us to watch the movies and vote. But I feel like if you're going to vote, you got to watch all the movies.
Is it all online?
Most of them are. I've got a bunch of movies in the mail, too.
It's all online.
You can get them all online. I've watched a lot of them online. I still have to watch Parasite, which Chris Black saw and really liked. And I really like that director. It's a South Korean director. I won't even try his name because I'll probably just butcher it. But I was recently turned on to him from a movie he did about 5 years ago called Snowpiercer, which is fabulous.
Snowpiercer.
And I mean fabulous. Chris, have you seen Snowpiercer?
No, I haven't.
Incredible. Do yourself a favor.
Give me the two sentences description.
Dystopian Earth where everybody is divided in classes on a train circling the globe.
All right, perfect. I'm
in. It's phenomenal. And it's got a lot of star power in it. Like, for a movie that you'd probably never heard of, it's got Ed Harris, and it's got Tilda Swinton, and who the kid who played Captain America is in it. Like, it's got star power.
Chris Evans?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, he's the number one guy.
I'm telling you, it is a fabulous movie. And that director did Parasite, which I've heard is great.
Kang Ho Song is in it.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but...
have you seen the movie?
I have, but
he's the second star of the movie.
You're talking about the... Okay, I don't know who he is.
John Hurt is in this movie?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Octavia Spencer?
Octavia Spencer's great in it.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton is amazing in it.
Adnan Hoskovich is in this?
Yeah, it's really great. So anyway, I've got to catch up on that. I've watched a bunch, though. I finally watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was terrific. I watched Jojo Rabbit, which was really good. I don't know if you guys have seen that one yet, but check that out. It's really good. Marriage Story was really good, actually. I didn't think I was going to like that. The one with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson about the couple getting divorced. It's on Netflix. That was really, really good. A couple of good actors, man. Scarlett Johansson's great. So
you're a big fan of hers.
Oh, how can you not be? She's beautiful. She can act. She's great.
So he wanted to know what it was. In a future where a failed climate change experiment has killed off life, except for the lucky few who boarded the Snowpiercer, a train that travels around the globe, a new class system emerges.
Awesome, dude. Yeah. I'm telling you, nice. York, it's so great. You can't imagine.
Yeah, it looks good.
You'll love it. It's absolutely great. So I think I might, after the Bulls game tonight, I'm thinking, what's next? I'm trying to get through all these movies, and I'm like, wow, I really want to watch Parasite, and I really want to watch Ford versus Ferrari, and I want to watch, I'm overwhelmed. So I'm going to try to catch up after Bulls and Bulls and Pels
tonight. You need to. I told you to go see Ford versus Ferrari.
I know, I'm
going to
watch that. I might watch that tonight, actually. So
there was a chance that Zion was going to play tonight, right? But it's not happening.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening.
I saw him dunking the other day.
He looks like he's getting close, doesn't it?
They said he needs to practice fully with the team for a couple of weeks.
And that hasn't happened yet?
Yeah, no.
Not even full
practice? Based on their schedule and the practice schedule, they haven't.
The Bulls are still a 4-point underdog tonight against a 12-win team. That's terrible. You know who I did see is planning to make his debut against the Bulls at the end of the month? I think in a sit-down interview with Shams.
Victor Oladipo, right? Yeah. The 29th of January.
Shams Charania sat down, who's a great NBA writer for Stadium and The Athletic. He had an interview with Oladipo, and he said they're targeting Jan 29. How about the way the Pacers have hung around without Oladipo? They've still played well enough. I think they're the fourth seed right now. I mean, like in the East, I guess that's not great, but like they're playing without Oladipo. So and
four games above 500 puts you right there.
Brogdon's missed a couple games here recently because he's a little bit banged up. So, all right, Crosstalk with Waddle and Sylvie is coming up next. We'll see what the boys have on tap to get you home, and we'll have fun as always with the guys. That's right around the corner on ESPN 1000.